What a story, what a story, what a story. What a story, what a story, what a story. You have to have a story. You have to entertain us after all. Draw a situation that we can comprehend. So show us where's the glory, and who's the one who gets to take a fall. Is there a confrontation? What happens in the end will be the cue, the question, and you're the A. And when this is through, let's hope the only thing there is to say. What a story, what a story, what a story. What a story, what a story, what a story.
Signature song, What a Story, written by Duncan Christie for a musical called Magazine. And one of the most interesting things about Magazine is it is so relevant right now. A little later on in the show, we're going to play something, another tune from that show called Off the Record, as if off the record means anything in this day and age. Today we're going to continue with some of the plays, but we're going to do a recap. The plays have been written by Jim Gordon, and they're called My Trumpfuls, although Jim Gordon has great titles for them, and they're kind of doing well in that people have been asking to stage read them, and some contests have been won, and I plan to make sure that everyone knows about them, because they're relevant and absolutely wonderful. So here we go. Actually, we're going to do something a little different, in that I'm going to start with something much more innocent than the Trumpfuls. And it's a story done by WPKN's own Bob Johnson. And it was done at the Westport Art Center. And I am trying to make sure that I have the right cue. So give me all a break, and we'll go here. So 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 5, 6, 7, 3. This is 2. And let's see if we've got what I think we've got. It's Bob Johnson, and the title of this story is Ham Actor. And I think it's about 10 years ago. I had to do a little blipping in here, because at the end of this story, and Bob, who's quite a gentleman, there was a little profanity. So you'll hear that. Let's go. Bob Johnson, Westport Art Center, Ham Actor.
American Shakespeare Theater Festival in Stratford, Connecticut announced its summer season.
1978.
Show, Little Abner. The hillbilly musical. You see, in the 1950s, the theater was very successful. Such a large house in the 1970s, it became very difficult to fill this large house. So the producers decided that a good push to revive the house would be to bring in musicals, summer stock. And that summer, out of work, out of college, I took a lowly job as a production assistant. It's the lowest job on the theater ladder. But I did get to drive the rental car, because I was the oldest intern. So it was great in that way. And I did odd jobs. I mean, I went for coffee, I answered the phones, I even read performer contracts. And it was my job to attend to the pigs. I'm not talking about the actors or the crew. It's the even-toed ungulates, the pigs, hogs. I was a pig wrangler. And producers needed a gimmick. It wasn't enough that Lucy Arnaz was starring as Daisy May in the show. They wanted a real farm animal for the fictional town of Dogpatch, USA. So they searched far and wide for the perfect pig. Oh boy, the morning DJs had a great time with the idea of the pig contest. Why did the pig go to Las Vegas? To play the slot machine. And of course, since it was at Shakespeare Theater, what's a pig's least favorite Shakespearean play?
Hamlet.
There you go. All right, so the big day for the pig contest is the day before opening Tuesday. And, you know, Connecticut has a lot of pig farms, or at least it did back in the 70s, because we had a lot of contestants show up. We had pot-bellied pigs and all other kinds of pets. And, you know, pot-bellied pigs would have been great, because you could lead a pig, a pot-bellied pig, on and off the stage with a leash. You know, pretty easy. But the producers, in their wisdom, decided that they would choose two farm animals, two piglets, a male and a female. I don't know why they chose two, probably because one could understudy for the other. The pigs were about 3 months old. They weighed about 25 pounds. We built a small pen behind the theater, and we named them Fred and Ethel. The producers left it up to me to decide who was to star in the show, so I picked Fred. Of course, it was easy enough. So here's how it worked. The pig was to appear in the third musical number of the show. And if the show went up at 8 o'clock, I had enough time to go down to the pen, fetch Fred, bring him into the theater just in time for his cue. My task was to go to the wings and hand off the piglet to the young actress playing Luella. Luella would go onto the stage, and she'd hold the pig for 3 minutes while she sang the song. And she would come back, she would hand me the pig, and I would go back and get him into his pen by 8:30. And by 8:30, he was off the clock. So, the first night goes pretty smoothly. At least I think so. I give Luella the pig, she does her song, she comes off stage, she gives me the pig, I take him back to the pen. Not even a grunt. Well, the next night, the producer of the show, Leo Meyer, comes up to me and he says, "Bob, the pig doesn't even look real. He doesn't blink. He doesn't make a noise. He looked like a toy, stuffed." I guess he wasn't very happy. And I said, he said to me, "Is there anything you can do?" I have no idea how to direct Fred to behave more like a pig. So I just shrug. Anyway, Fred must have got some acting tips from Ethel, because that night, Wednesday night, he was a hit. Luella brings him out, he struggles just a little bit, lets out a few noises, comes back off the stage, and Leo, that night, after the show, he says to me, "Bob, whatever you did was wonderful. The pig was a hit. Maybe he can do this for the whole run. That'll be great." Well, Thursday comes around, I start my routine, and as I'm walking back to the theater, Fred is a little restless. He's squirming just a little bit as I'm carrying him up to the theater. And as I pass him to Luella, he's continuing in this agitated state. Luella takes him onto the stage, and I'm watching her, and his little trotters go like this. He's lurching, and he's squirming, and he's starting to grunt, and he's squealing, and he's hissing, and he's spitting, and Luella is out there singing her song. She didn't miss a beat, but quickly she runs off stage, and she tries to hand the pig to me, but before she does, she says in a very loud stage whisper, "The f***ing pig bit me." And as she's handing the pig to me, he's moving around, and what if he lurches into the audience, or whatever. He's moving around, and I'm grabbing him, and all of a sudden I'm holding him by the leg, and then he drops onto the floor, and he starts running behind the stage. And I'm thinking, I'm the pig wrangler. What if the pig goes out onto stage, and the curtain comes down, or he runs into the audience? I am now responsible for the safety of the cast, the crew, and the audience. I'm scared shitless. But Fred isn't. So we go out there, And a stagehand, a big guy, comes up to me and goes, you need a hand? I said, yes, would you help me? So we managed to get Fred calm down, we get him in a corner, I talk to him, we have this thing. We pick him up, take him back, very quietly. The show goes on without a pause. All this was going on backstage. However, after the show, Leo comes up to me and says, the pig is out. He's hamming up and hogging the stage. Call that farmer in here and have him pick his pigs up and send them home.
Wasn't that fun? Here we go with Jim Gordon's The Return. I played this last month. It's good to have it again. It's short, it's funny, and it's relevant.
Preliminary hearing is in process to determine if the case should go to trial.
Please tell the court your name.
Howard Tott.
Would you please speak a little louder?
My name is Howard Tott.
And what is your place of employment, Mr. Tott?
I work for the IRS.
That would be the Internal Revenue Service.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
What was your position at the IRS?
I was an accountant.
I object, Your Honor. Attorney Stewart is implying the IRS no longer employs his client. That's incorrect. He's still an employee.
A technicality, Your Honor. Mr. Tott was suspended without pay, unjustly, I might add.
Nevertheless, he's still an employee. The objection is sustained.
Mr. Tott, what were your duties at the IRS?
I was an examiner.
Your Honor, please.
Mr. Stewart, please tell your client he's still an employee. Sorry, Your Honor. I'm an examiner.
As an examiner, you had access to tax returns.
I did, yes.
Mr. Tott, have you ever seen President Trump's tax return?
Yes, I have.
On the computer, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Mr. Tott, why were you looking at President Trump's tax return?
Well, I was curious. I wanted to see what all the hoopla was about.
Were you aware you might be breaking the law?
No, of course not.
Your Honor, Mr. Tott knows he cannot arbitrarily look at someone's tax return. Access is on a need-to-know basis. Mr. Tott had no reason to be looking through Mr. Trump's tax records. He was breaking the law.
An IRS rule, Your Honor, not the law. Mr. Tott, I'll ask you again. Did you believe what you did was illegal?
No.
Did you at any time share what you saw on President Trump's tax return with anyone?
No, I did not.
Thank you, Mr. Tott. Your witness.
Mr. Tott, are you a Democrat or a Republican?
I object.
Goes to motive, Your Honor.
I'll allow it. Well, I try to stay away from politics, but I suppose you could consider me a Democrat.
Suppose?
Well, yes, I'm a Democrat, although I have voted Republican.
Would it be safe to assume you don't like President Trump?
I place him in the category of folks I'm not too fond of. A simple yes or no would do, Mr. Tott.
Would you go as far as to say you hate him?
I object. Mr. Tott has already stated he isn't fond of our president. I think that should be sufficient.
So do I. Sustained.
Would you say, given the opportunity, you would cause him harm?
You would have to define what you mean by harm.
The harm that would result if Mr. Trump's tax return were made public?
Well, what possible damage could result from the public looking at a legitimate tax return?
Your Honor, please.
Mr. Tott, ignorance may be bliss, but not in my courtroom.
Do you recall where you were the afternoon of January 16th?
Last year?
Yes, Mr. Tott, last year.
January 16th. Let me think.
Come on, Mr. Tott. You know very well where you were.
I believe I was in New York City.
In fact, you were outside Trump Tower waiting for the president to arrive. Isn't that true?
I wasn't waiting. I got stuck in the crowd.
When the president exited his limousine and crossed towards the hotel, you swore at him.
Oh, I don't recall doing that.
You yelled to get his attention. When he turned, you swore at him.
I did? What did I say?
A profanity.
Could you be more specific?
Your Honor...
Your Honor, my client is entitled to know what he's being accused of.
I agree. I'm sure I've heard it all, Miss Croft.
A lying, immoral, draft-dodging...
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that. I heard every word, Mr. Tott. There's no need to repeat it, Mrs. Croft.
Do you recall saying that?
That he was a lying, immoral, draft-dodging bitch? No, I don't recall saying anything like that. Mr. Tott, say it again and I'll hold you in contempt. Sorry, Your Honor.
You were recorded on videotape.
What videotape? The videotape I was shown was of a person wearing a ski mask.
Your client was wearing a ski mask.
Well, everyone. It was a chilly afternoon.
There were witnesses who heard him say it.
They may have heard someone say it, but it wasn't my client. Your Honor, there were many angry people there that afternoon, yelling many angry things. That's what protesters do. Many of them were wearing masks.
They were Trump supporters, not protesters.
Obviously, one of them wasn't.
Your Honor, as far as I know, there's still a First Amendment in this country.
You cannot threaten.
What threat? Where is the threat in saying Mr. Trump is an immoral...
Careful, Mr. Stewart.
If I may, Your Honor, when Trump's people found out Mr. Tott had gained access to Trump's tax return, they panicked. The pressure Mr. Tott into not releasing what he may have discovered, they made up this nonsense about him threatening the president and had him arrested.
Mr. Tott hates Mr. Trump. We believe he'd take advantage of his position at the IRS to harm Mr. Trump. He already admitted to viewing Mr. Trump's records, and we're convinced he made copies.
How can I copy 1,200 pages?
He didn't have to. Given Mr. Tott's familiarity with Trump's tax documents, he could have gone to and recorded the more sensitive parts of the return.
That's ridiculous. I took one quick look, and most of what I saw I couldn't understand.
Mr. Tott, you are a certified public accountant. Are you telling the court you're unable to read a tax document?
Sure, I can read a tax document, but I don't speak Russian.
Your Honor, please.
My client is answering Mr. Croft's question.
Novacek, Russian, Hydro, who the heck
Your
is
that? Your Honor!
Enough, Mr. Tott.
My client is trying to answer Croft's question.
He's trying to do more than that.
To read a document as large and complicated as Mr. Trump's, you would need to spend hours viewing it. The IRS has ways of determining who's reading someone's tax return, and they would immediately cut off access.
Which comes to my next question, Mr. Tott. What did you do before you became an accountant?
I don't understand the question.
Where did you work before you worked at the IRS?
Cromwell Industries.
What did you do there?
I was a technician.
Could you be more specific?
A good technician.
In fact, you are a computer technician with more than enough expertise to evade the safety mechanisms set in place by the IRS.
That's ridiculous. Mrs. Croft, you stated you were convinced Mr. Tott has copied Mr. Trump's tax return. Do you have proof?
Mr. Tott has already admitted he looked at the return without permission.
Thousands of IRS employees have access to that return. It's hard to imagine others haven't also taken a peek.
But Mr. Tott has been particularly vocal in his dislike for President Trump.
He's not alone, Mrs. Croft.
If Mr. Trump would just release his tax return, we wouldn't be here wasting the court's time.
Mrs. Croft, Mr. Trump is obviously upset, however. Nothing in what Mr. Tott is accused of would suggest threatened President Trump with bodily harm. I end these proceedings.
I must remind Mr. Tott of the criminal penalties he'd face if he released information acquired from viewing Mr. Trump's tax record.
I resent Croft's implication.
Not to mention the civil lawsuits.
I should remind Attorney Croft that a criminal or civil action would require Mr. Trump to make his tax return available in court.
That sounds like a threat.
If Trump claims the damaging information is fake, the court would need to see the return to determine that. If the information is real and as hurtful to Mr. Trump as the public thinks it is, why would he want anyone to see it?
I'm afraid, Mrs. Croft, your client has a bigly problem.
Your Honor!
Case dismissed.
the record, off the record, off the record. There is nothing whatsoever you can't say. Off the record, off the record, off the record. And when you're done, there's only hell to pay. It's appalling, it's enthralling, this arrangement. It's journalism's favorite indoor game. When there's no way to get hung, there's no need to curb the tongue. Come on, we promise we won't use your name. And when it comes to leaks, no idea that we can't fix, no reputation that we can't defame. I can never get my fill of this busy rumor mill, turning gossip into gospel with authority and skill. Are we bringing out the worst as we race to be the first? Who really cares? What matters is the kill. Off the record, off the record, off the record. You say that you would like to screw your boss. Off the record, off the record, off the record. For options, we are never at a loss. Give us one malignant little acorn from which to cultivate the fatal oak. Does he abuse the kids? Or does he rig the contract bids? Is it gambling? Is it porno? Is it coke? Profits on the skim? Well, that'll be the end of him. That's how we represent the common folk. Celebrity duress, then it's time to meet the press. A gang of creeping, peeping toms who love to second guess. Did you say entre nous? What you meant was entre two. Let's cut the readership in on this mess. Off the record, off the record, off the record. Things are not exactly as they might appear. Off the record, off the record, off the record. It's scandalous, it's shocking, did you hear? That the starlet has a weeny little problem. She seems to think of mankind as her guy. She was buffo in rehab. I hear she did it with her lab. But with her llama, things just went awry. She silenced all the lambs, and then the raiders, and then the rams. And now she's working on the L-A-Y. Off the record, are you suggesting, or do you mean? Off the record, off the record, off the record, that the Pope is actually a queen. There are stories about even poor old Santa, and how he handles things around his pole. Being very fond of elves, he takes them on in tens and twelves. It's active and aerobic on the whole. When they're not stocking shelves, he has them playing with themselves. He says that it improves their self-control. My intemperate remarks are sure to cause some sparks, and just like Cupid's arrows, they are sure to hit their marks. When people are cuisine, it brings out the hyena in all of us for dining on the carcass. Off the record, off the record, off the record. There is nothing whatsoever you can't say. Off the record, off the record, off the record. And when you're done, there's only hell to pay. It's so vicious, it's delicious, this arrangement. It's journalism's favorite indoor game. When there's no way to get hung, there's no need to curb the tongue. Come on, we promise we won't use your name. And when it comes to leaks, no idea that we can't fix, no reputation that we can't defame. If you're taking notes, call us all deep throats. Just don't put the names in quotes.
A little Tom Lehrer. How about that? That's our own Tom Lehrer. That's Duncan Christie from a 1991 musical that he wrote and that Mouse Muse, my little sidearm, produced in a stage reading. And who could ever, ever know that we, off the record, would mean there is no record. Here we go with Jim Gordon's part one of the incident. Again, second time airing, but we're going to keep these little plays grouped correctly.
WPKN, Connecticut.
The Incident by Jim Gordon. Scene 1. Donald Trump's office at his Mar-a-Lago vacation retreat. At Rise, President Trump enters, followed by Rance Priebus, the president's chief of staff. Trump is reading a letter as Priebus places a briefcase on the president's desk.
Your briefcase, Mr. President.
Put it on my desk.
Can I get you anything, sir? Coffee? Tea?
Hot chocolate.
Cynthia, order a hot chocolate for the president, please. That's a great deal of money, sir.
What did I say it would cost?
I believe you said $10 billion.
And what's that say?
$30
billion. You're a smart man, Priebus. I want you to tell me how they came up with $30
billion. I don't know, Mr. President. I'm not an engineer.
Well, who negotiated this?
Homeland Security.
Are they crazy? Who's in charge over there?
Miller, sir.
Miller?
Yes, Steve Miller. He was governor of Kansas.
Get him on the phone.
The newspapers are on your desk, sir.
Kansas? We're trying to keep Mexicans out, not cows. Wait a second. Wasn't Miller the guy who bankrupted that state?
He was, sir. Steve Miller, please.
Why did we hire him?
He raised a lot of money.
We couldn't make him an ambassador or something?
Secretary Miller, the president would like a word. I have Miller on the phone, sir.
Oh, my God, look at the times here. It says that Comey called me a liar. I thought he was on our side.
Well, FBI directors don't take sides, sir.
Why the hell did we hire him?
We didn't. He's President Obama appointment.
Former President Priebus. Former president.
Sir, I have Miller on the phone.
Who?
Steve Miller, Homeland Security. You wanted to speak with him.
I'll call back.
Mr. Secretary, something came up. He'll call you back.
Who is it?
Your hot chocolate, Mr. President.
Hot chocolate? Since when do I drink hot chocolate? Get me a burger and some fries and water, no ice.
Yes, sir.
This is bullshit, Priebus.
Sir?
They're saying that Comey's 6'8". Right there, you see it? See what it says? Director Comey is 6'8". You see that?
Yeah, I do, sir.
6'8" would make him taller than me, wouldn't it?
I believe it would.
You see what they're doing here? You see, don't you, Priebus?
What are they doing, sir?
What do you think when you hear tall?
A building, person's height, a drink?
No. You think smart. When people hear tall, they think smart. They make assumptions.
Assumptions, sir?
What comes after tall and smart? Tall and smart, what comes next?
I don't know, sir.
Honest, Priebus, honest. Who do you think of when you hear tall, smart, and honest?
Well, I don't know, sir.
Now, come on, Priebus, a tall, smart, honest politician with a beard. Who do you think of?
Lincoln?
Bingo! You see that? You see what they're doing?
I'm afraid I don't, sir.
Lincoln never lied.
I believe that was Washington, Mr. President.
Okay, Washington.
What's your point, sir?
If Washington never lied, neither would Comey. Assumptions, Priebus. People make assumptions.
If I may, sir, you accuse the former president of intentionally tapping your phone? The FBI has no record of that. The director didn't call you a liar. He's simply responding to your accusation.
Wait a second. Well done on that burger.
Sir, there are laws. A president cannot order a wiretap. The Justice Department does that. You need a warrant and a judge has to approve it.
They never get it right.
Well, perhaps, but it is their decision to make, sir.
No, I meant my hamburger. I told them a million times. Well done. They just don't get it.
What do you intend to do, Mr. President?
Get a new chef.
About the wiretap accusation.
Okay, maybe it wasn't the president, but someone tapped my phone, for God's sakes, Priebus. You heard what's-her-name said about microwaves.
Ms. Conway?
They put phones in those things.
She said cameras, sir, not phones.
Microwave, microphone, phone, Priebus, phone! You think that's a coincidence? I want a press conference.
Mr. President, you're here at your vacation retreat because your staff thought it a good idea to keep you away from the press.
Yeah, but I have to defend myself.
Sir, our lawyers told us to put the phone business aside until we have proof.
You have proof. I gave you proof. The article in the paper is proof. Read it.
We've contacted the writer, but on advice of his attorney, he won't speak to us.
What about that radio guy?
His information came from the same article you read in the newspaper.
Get him on the phone. The radio guy, get him on the phone.
He won't speak to us.
Tell him it's the president. He'll speak to me.
He won't do that, sir.
What do you mean he won't do that? I'm the president of the United States.
On the advice of counsel, he refuses to speak to anyone. He won't budge.
Why?
Your wife is here, Mr. President.
Not now. I'm busy. So what do I do, huh? For Christ's sake, Priebus, you're my chief of staff. You're supposed to help me with this stuff.
Mr. President, I don't...
Did I ask for ketchup?
What?
On my burger, did I ask for ketchup?
It should come with the hamburger, Mr. President.
I can't eat a burger without ketchup.
Sir, If they tapped your phone, it would mean there was sufficient evidence for a judge to issue a warrant. That raises a lot of questions.
Like what?
I don't know, sir. Do you?
Do you know they recommended me for the Peace Prize?
No, sir.
The Peace Prize? Me and Putin?
The Nobel Peace Prize?
Is there another?
That's wonderful news, Mr. President.
The Nobel Peace Prize. How about that?
If I may, Mr. President.
What is it?
Let's not call a press conference, not yet. Why don't we follow the path our lawyers suggested and put that aside, at least until we have more information?
Okay, why don't we do that?
Oh, that's an excellent idea, Mr. President. Will there be anything else?
No.
Oh, sir, your wife is here.
She is?
Yes. Should I ask her to come in?
Yeah, yeah.
We'll talk later, sir. And congratulations.
Congratulations?
The Peace Prize?
Oh, yeah. Quite an honor. $30 billion. My God.
Your wife is here, Mr. President.
Day. But you won't listen, you always stay and stay. How can I miss you when you won't go away? I've talked to your mother and I've talked to your dad. They say they've tried but it's all in vain. Begged and I've pleaded, I've even got mad. Now we must face it, you give me a pain. When you won't go away. Keep telling you day after day.
And now for part two of the incident. Want you all to know that the playwright was playing with changing the names. So you will hear the Melania character calling the former Donald Trump Howard, and his name is Howard Durack in the first version of scene two, but it will go back to that. And there is a reading of this play in its entirety, I believe, a staged reading at the Stratford Library on August 29th. I don't have the exact time, but I think it's during the day and right after my show. So here we go.
How can I miss you when you won't go away?
Why are you here?
I'm fine, Howard. How are you?
Not good. Did you read today's Times?
Your son? Oh, Jack's fine too. He said to say hello. He wonders why you haven't visited us.
I'm not welcome in New York. I don't go where I'm not welcome.
Well, I'm not moving to Russia. Here's your lunch.
Hey, this looks great. Well done, and they didn't forget the ketchup.
You shouldn't be eating that junk. You're getting fat.
A couple of pounds, no big deal.
Howard, they sell full-length mirrors. I suggest you buy one.
What do you want?
I suspect someone's tapping my phone. I thought you could suggest a tactful way to resolve the problem.
Not funny. I told you to call before you come.
I did. I do. I leave messages. Lots of messages. I'm not Washington Post reported Howard. I'm your wife. I deserve callback.
I'll look into it. Anything else?
1 month ago, you promised to take Jack to Fantasy World. What happened?
I'm the President of the United States. That's what happened. I'm busy.
You play 18 rounds of golf since your promise. The only time Jack sees you, you're hitting out of sand traps.
I'll check my schedule.
Forget it. I'm taking him.
Oh, terrific. You were a great mother. Why are you here?
I thought that would help prepare Jack for Fantasy World's horror house.
I don't need your sarcasm. If you're going, go. I have things to do. I have an important meeting this afternoon.
I'm thinking about moving into the White House. We need to talk.
Okay, that's beautiful. That's a terrific idea.
Do you mean that?
Of course I mean it. People were starting to talk, you know? Didn't look good, you living in New York and me here. You moving in will make it seem like we're a family. That's important.
Seem?
You know what I mean. I'll get my press people on it right away.
There were benefits in not having you in New York. Aside from allowing me to get in and out of my building without confronting angry mobs, it gave me time to think. Sometimes when you're away from problem, you see it more clearly. I came here to try to help you. I have some suggestions.
I don't have any problems. I'm doing fine. Just move in and take care of Jack. I don't need your help or your suggestions.
Your approval ratings are higher in Russia than here. You have problem, Howard.
I have a plan to fix that. My ratings will go through the roof.
Not another Iowa pep rally?
I can't tell you now. I'm seeing someone this afternoon. As soon as we work out the details, you'll know.
In the meantime, suggestions for you. Stop tweeting.
Farrell told you to come here, didn't he?
You're starting to contradict yourself. Often in the same tweet. If you insist on tweeting, at least have someone edit them.
This is Farrell's idea, isn't it? He told you to tell me that.
Everyone is telling you that. You're not listening. Your bizarre and unsubstantiated accusations are damaging you, your presidency, and the country.
This isn't well done.
What?
The burger, it isn't well done. I told them a million times, well done. They just don't get it.
Herbert, I am not going to move here. I want to be listened to.
I always listen to you.
No, you hear. Hearing is passive, like listening to Carhon. To listen, you need to pay attention. Do I have your attention, Herbert?
That's roaring the sun. Look, you see that? It's all red.
The Howard!
The Times called me a liar, right? I'm upset, okay?
You are a liar! Lying is what you do. It's instinctive, like breathing. And from the nonsense your press secretary is spouting, it's contagious. Besides, the Times didn't call you a liar. They said you're delusional.
Bastards.
You should be pleased. It's the nicest thing they've said about you.
The Times is calling me crazy, and my chefs are serving me live cows. I don't need this.
Your party's about to push Durek Care through Congress and leave 24 million people without health insurance. Those are your people, Howard. You have to do something. If you're not going to listen to me, listen to your supporters. Help them and show the rest of the country that you have.
I intend to.
People will get hurt. Families will suffer big time. They're what did you say?
I said I intend to do something.
You do?
Yeah. I'm calling a press conference to announce my new and very liberal position on health insurance. I want everyone covered and no restrictions on Medicaid.
Okay, that's good. It's a step in the right direction, but it is not realistic. The Republicans will never agree.
I'll tell them that God told me to do it.
God told you?
He came to me in a vision. He told me to show more compassion.
However, no one is going to believe God has you on his Rolodex.
You're right. And they'll continue to ram their bill through Congress.
So, how do you intend to stop them?
I didn't say I would stop them. I said I would do something. I'll protest.
I don't understand.
I'll object. They'll ignore me and pass the bill. The Democrats will hate them for passing it and love me for trying to stop it. When the smoke clears, we'll have the bill we wanted. The liberals will support me in the next election, and the evangelicals will love that I'm buddy-buddy with God. It's brilliant.
However, people will die. Children will die.
Fake news.
You have no idea what's in that bill, do you? I doubt you've read one single page of that document.
I don't have to. People will tell me what's in it.
Truth is, you don't care what's in it. You don't care if people die.
Mr. Mallory is here, Mr. President.
My wife's just leaving.
You have no idea how government works. And worse, you're not interested in learning. The contempt, the insensitivity, and callousness you show towards Jack and me is the same you show towards women. They don't seem to mind. I do.
Okay, speech is over. Time for you to leave.
I intend to. I am not moving into your White House. You're not a complete person, Heather. You don't have a conscience. I don't want Jack influenced by men I feel is totally lacking in ethical and moral principles. You have no sense of right and wrong, and that is unsettling, Herbert, because it means you are capable of almost anything.
Be careful. Don't challenge me, Vivian. I'll go to court. I'll get custody.
Herbert, I never loved you. I married you for your money. Not nice thing. I agree. But there it is. I thought in time, after I got to know you better, I'd learn to love you. Well, I've gotten to know you better. And not only I don't love you, I don't like you.
You want a divorce?
No, you're not getting rid of me, Howard. You're getting rid of your prenup.
No way. My prenups are cut in stone.
Then I suggest you purchase hammer and chisel. I don't have time to argue. My son is waiting for me. So I'll cut to the chase. Divorce will hurt you politically. I can hurt you personally. Very personally. I kept a diary, Howard. If you force me to, I shall tell it like it was, and the viral image you've tried so hard to create will go the way of your water, wine, and hamburger business.
You kept a diary?
And the entries, like an FBI's agent's notes, are extremely detailed.
I'll sue.
Really? And testify under oath? Harvard, you couldn't get past the swearing in without lying.
You...
My lawyer will be in touch with your lawyer. For the sake of your child and your presidency, I suggest you keep the prenup negotiations as quiet as possible. Perhaps Senator McConnell can handle it. He's good at keeping secrets. Goodbye, Heather. I'm off to another fantasy world.
End of scene 2. So, the voice of Melania, also known as Vivian in various versions of the play, was done by Giovanna Oclisi, an actress and a good one. And that is not her accent, but, you know, it's not so easy to do an Eastern European accent. And Larry Greeley, Forever Trump. Larry Greeley can do, he is the man of many voices and many wits. And that was the end of scene 2 of the incident, which last time I played a car crash, and we're taking you there, but you gotta wait. So here we go with another little snippet of something that made me laugh.
Listen up, nitwits. Who here is tired of illegal space aliens taking our good Earth jobs? Yeah! Me too. So, if I'm re-elected, I promise to build a really big Dyson fence across the southern border of our solar system. Yeah! And furthermore, by golly, I promise to cut taxes for the rich and use the poor as a cheap source of teeth for aquarium gravel.
The baseball teams would stop, the audience would stop. We'd wait for it to resound off the brewery across the street, and then we'd run like hell.
We're getting into Bill Bosch telling a wonderful story
and
about fireworks.
I couldn't get me anywhere, but one summer, that particular summer, my parents decided they'd take a trip to Ottawa, Canada. Now, I didn't give a crap about Ottawa, Canada, but I knew that they sold fireworks in Canada. So I used the old 12-year-old trick, which is you bug your parents. You just bug them incessantly forever. You say things like, I'm a Boy Scout. I'm an honor student. I'm responsible. You've got to let me get some fireworks. And eventually, you just wear them down, and they give in, and they say, fine, we go to Canada. You can buy fireworks. So on our way back from Canada, I bug my father, and he says, fine, we pull over, and I've got over $50, which in the middle 60s is a lot of money to buy fireworks. I buy all this stuff. We come across the border. I'm thinking, great, my father and I are going to spend several years in prison for carrying all this contraband across into the United States. But nothing happens, of course. I go home, and they didn't let me buy any M80s, but I had Roman candles and Mount Vesuvius and bricks of firecrackers. It was all fantastic. And I went into my bedroom, and I took a drawer out of the bottom of the bureau. I took all the clothes out, and I put all my fireworks in that drawer. And I was not the type of kid to go and just set them all off in a week. I would set one off, and then a few, one more. And lots of times I would just pull the bottom drawer out and put it on my bed and just sit there with my fireworks. It was tremendous. Now, an important part of this story is that you have to understand my bedroom, because there were my parents and myself, a very small house, two bedrooms, one bathroom, and then my sister had to go and get born. They needed a third bedroom. So there was no place in this house to build a bedroom, and they came up with a brilliant idea. They would take out the closet that was in the bathroom and build my bedroom on the other side of the bathroom. But the only way in and out was through the bathroom. Now, this could be a little awkward at times, but after a while, you get used to it. So I'd walk through, and my father would be sitting on the toilet reading a newspaper, and I'd say, hi, Dad, and he'd say, hi, Bill, and I'd go through. And that was okay until my sister, of course, got to be about 13 or 14. And then I'd walk through and she'd say, what are you doing? You can't come through here. And I'd go, I'm not looking. I'm not looking. And I'd walk through to the other side. Well, on this particular day, I had a friend visiting from across town. And we were in my room. And I had the drawer out on the bed. And I had a firecracker that was fake, but the fuse was real. So you could do ridiculous things like you could light the fuse and then you could stick it down your friend's pants if you wanted to and nothing would happen. I don't know what possessed me, but on that particular day, I took one of the fuses, put it in the fake firecracker, and lit it. But unfortunately, unlike the fake fuse, which is just supposed to sizzle, this went off like a sparkler. And within 3 seconds, the drawer was filled with 100 sparks. Now, if you know bricks of firecrackers, they have, it's like a rice paper. It immediately starts to smolder. And in a real brainiac move, I start to pat everything in the drawer, which only flames everything more, and everything is starting to really burn. So I say to myself, well, I may be a dope, but I'm a Boy Scout and an honor student. And I say, holy shit, this is not good. So I take that drawer and I pick it up and I say, what am I going to do? I got to get it out of here. I go to one of the windows, but this is a new room. These aren't sashes that open this way. They crank. And so the window goes this way and I've got the drawer above my head because I can hear things starting to pop and fizzle. I can't get this drawer out of that window at all. So I run into the bathroom and I see the tub. So I say, fantastic. I throw the drawer in the tub. I put the stopper on. I put the water on and I run out. By now, things are really starting to go. I peek through and I can hear pops, such a smash. Listen, things are going around. A lot of it's staying in the tub, but you know, it's still kind of like the Roman candles are sort of bouncing off the walls and stuff. Now, my friend had exited about 2 minutes ago, ran down the stairs, out the front steps. He was gone. I hear my mother screaming, what's happening? What is happening? I run down the stairs to the landing and I tackle her and I just say, you can't go up there. You can't go up there. I go back up. I open the door. I look inside. It's like some horrible Marx Brothers movie with things going and the drawer is floating in the tub. So I close the drawer again. I wait about 15 seconds. I hear a rather large explosion. I look through and I can see what's happened is the drawer has completely exploded. And as soon as it did, everything sunk into the tub into 2 inches of water and everything went out. So the whole entire affair lasted but 2 minutes, perhaps. I opened the door. That gray cloud of smoke was hanging in there, slowly wafting out of the window. The drawer, all four sides were blown out. The big old steel ceramic tub had kind of like a melted portion in the back. And the shower curtain was a little bit smoldering and on fire. But more than anything else, there was just ash marks everywhere. Nothing burned. Nothing was on fire. It just was ash all over the place. And My mother came up, and my father, who worked late, was not home, and we cleaned for hours and hours and hours, and the place was okay, but there were two reminders always. There was that bureau that always had an empty drawer, no drawer at all. And every time I stood in that shower, I saw that melted piece of the tub as well. I didn't get any fireworks for a very, very long time, obviously, but I can say that over the course of my life, I have had great opportunities to see fireworks in a million different places. I've had the opportunity to be on the East River and watch them over Manhattan. I sat in Grant Park in Chicago and watched them over Lake Michigan. I've seen them over the castle in Edinburgh, and I've actually been on a balcony in Rome on New Year's Eve, and I've seen the fireworks there as well. But the best fireworks I always have are in my backyard, and if you ever want to stop by, I will definitely set off an exploding mosquito for you.
That was Bill Bush on July 11th, I think, or July 13th, 2011, at a program we did called Mouse Muse. We did a program called Hot, 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 and it was outdoors with little angel lights. It was really fun, and maybe we'll try and do something like that again. We have to get Bill, who is one of my favorite people. Bill, I don't know if you're listening, but this program is available on SoundCloud in, I don't know, I want to say 24 hours. It may even be 2 hours, or it may be 48 hours. You are listening to Ina Chadwick and What a Story. And there were lots of tales of innocence here. Well, there were two tales of innocence and little interludes. One of the interludes was from Futurama, if anyone remembers those shows, a Nixon parody. Another one was the Charlatans singing, "How can you miss me? How can I miss you if you won't go away?" That was to lead into Melania and Donald Trump. And this is What a Story. We run, as if there are 17 of us, air on the last Saturday of the month from noon to 12:55. So I have just 3 more minutes. Tune in to hear us next week. I'm going to play something very innocent, and then we're going to go out with our signature song, What a Story. Please visit us at WPKN.org, Facebook, What a Story, and stay involved. We love the people who stay involved with us. Here we go with something very innocent, and then I will fade it out to What a Story. And until next month, thank you. Ina Chadwick here.
Blue sky, smiling at me. Nothing but blue sky do I see. Oh, don't talk, blue birds singing a song. Nothing but little blue birds all day long. I never saw the sun shining so bright. We never saw things going so right. Noticing the day hurrying by when you're in love. Oh, don't they fly? Blue days, all of them gone. Nothing but blue skies from now on. You like that, Mama?
That was Al Jolson, and I found the shift of innocence so marvelous. Now, off we go to say goodbye.
What a story, what a story, what a story. What a story, what a story, what a story. You have to have a story. You have to entertain us after all. Draw a situation that we can comprehend. So show us where's the glory, and who's the one who gets to take a fall. Is there a confrontation? What happens in the end? will be the Q, the question, and you're the A. And when this is through, let's hope the only thing there is to say. What a story. Topsoil, organic compost, mulch, dumpster.